Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's installment, I'm talking with author Jim Landwehr about his book, Dirty Shirt, a Boundary Waters memoir. Landwehr is going to be in St. Cloud tonight, Wednesday, December 17th, at the Stearns History Museum for their book club, which starts at 6:30 p.m. Landwehr himself has a day job of being a geographic information systems analyst, in other words, a map maker, but the memoir is much more than just a description of the various lakes up on the Boundary Waters. It's an exploration of family and how he and his brothers, who journeys to the Boundary Waters, got to know their father, who passed away when they were all very, very young, and also it's how the brothers are developing bonds with their own children and are creating something which truly defines the essence of what we know as tradition. So we'll start off with Jim introducing himself, as well as what it takes to start writing.
Well, my name is Jim Landwehr, and I hail from St. Paul, Minnesota. I grew up there for the first 25 years of my life, and originally my dad was from the St. Cloud area, so I still have a lot of family up in that area. But when I was about 25, I moved to Wisconsin and for a job change, and I've been here ever since. But my home is, or my heart is still at my home in Minnesota in a lot of respects. But I wrote this book partly out of just a desire to get stories down for my family. I wanted to have them live on into perpetuity. And the only way I could do it was to write one story at a time. And at this writing class, I started writing them down. And my instructor looked at me and said, well, we thought about making this a bigger collection, a story or a book. And I said, well, not really. And she goes, well, I think you should. She said, there's enough there and enough interest. And so I said, well, okay, well, maybe I'll take it beyond the family and into, you know, a book form and see what I can do with it. And she said, memoir tends to sell well right now anyway. So she said, it probably would be worth your while. So 240 pages, and almost 4 years later, I ended up with Dirty Shirt.
It's kind of strange how those little projects, a little thing that you start can just kind of keep growing and growing and growing just by being patient with it, and there you
right,
go.
Right, right. My instructor always said, well, just take it one story at a time. She said, don't worry about the order of things. Don't worry about the chronology. Just get the stories down. She said, we'll put them together later, and when she laid it out like that, it was a much easier book to write because I just took it one incident at a time, and most of them had a lot of humor built into them, so it was very easy to take a piece and almost make it a standalone piece and blend them all together at the end and shuffle them around a little bit.
Yeah, do you think that's something that maybe people would be, I don't know, intimidated by if they were going to create their own memoir, per se? That whole idea of it's got to be linear within time, you know, what happened next, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was what intimidated me, is I thought there's no continuity here until I was, you know, had all the stories down. And then I said, well, how am I going to lay this out? And when I did, it finally just all came to me at once. I was like, it's really a three-part book. And, you know, the middle part is going to be not really chronological, more methodical. And the beginning and the end parts are a little more chronological. So it really came together well. And but it took hashing it out with my instructor and my peers to how to lay it out in a book form.
Well, yeah, that concept of like the peer review and just, you know, bouncing it off of people. I think that that's very, very helpful for folks to do when they're trying to piece something like this together. So how did you come up with the title, Dirty Shirt?
Well, it was funny because I was struggling with the title, and I had told this short story in my class about the first trip I took up with my friends, and my brother was kind of the quintessential camper. He knew what he was doing. He had backpacked all the way across the country, my brother Tom, and he saw me packing, and he was kind of chuckling to himself. And then at one point I said, well, my favorite shirt is dirty and I don't have time to wash it. And he said, well, you know, Jim, I said, I'll just have to pack it. And he said, well, you know, Jim, it's always good to start a trip with a dirty shirt. And he was joking, of course, and just knowing that we were going to kind of go out there and do it wrong. And he kind of had to let us, you know, fail on our own kind of thing. But it, as it turned out, that trip was a complete disaster. But that comment about the dirty shirt just kind of resonated throughout the whole trip as far as just having a bad experience and just good advice going in.
Yeah, it's like that learning experience. You know, if you think about it, why exactly do you need clean clothes when you're going camping? Nothing's going to stay clean for long.
So. Right. But his thought was that, you know, you can do a lot of things bad, and that would be one of them, Jim. So, you know, as long as you're doing that wrong, you might as well do some other things wrong kind of thing. It was really it was kind of a bellwether for the trip. It was like, well, you know, good luck.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that first time is often, yeah. Well, speaking of which, these memoirs are all about going up to the Boundary Waters. Now, is this mostly, well, partially, is this kind of recounting some of the stories with your father and then with your family, the next generation? Or how have you kind of tied this together like that?
Well, the book is actually comprised of three parts. The first part is called Friends, and it's when I go up right out of high school with some high school friends and do everything wrong, and we have mishaps and trouble, but we learned a lot along the way. The middle part is when I go up with my brothers over 5 years. We went up and kind of retracing the steps of my dad. He died when we were five. He was murdered, and we were a family of six kids that were left in his wake. And us four brothers kind of went up there seeking kind of to walk in his footsteps because he loved the outdoors. He was a big outdoorsman. And we were out to just kind of find his soul in some respects without even really going up there with that intent. It was kind of going up there to bond with each other. And in the process of that, we discovered, you know, we kind of grew to know him a little bit better by knowing each other a little bit better. So that's the middle part of the book. And then the tail end of the book is when we take our kids up 25 years later and kind of pass the torch on to the next generation kind of thing. So it's really a three-part deal, and it really, when the continuity got laid out, I was like, okay, well, this makes sense because it is linear, but yet it's not completely, you know, structured, I guess. It's just kind of a little bit free-flowing and throughout. So,
well, the experience of the Boundary Waters going up there, that is somewhat of an eternal experience because those lakes are pretty much the same. I mean, obviously there's been some change over the years, but you know, like when you're talking about you and your brothers are trying to possibly retrace the steps of your father, trying to possibly, you know, get to know him through experiences maybe he had. You're on a lake in a canoe, you've got your fishing, your camping. How different is that from like 10 years ago or 20 years ago or even like 40 years ago? So maybe there's a little bit of that.
That's exactly it. I mean, in that it was when you're out there in that area anyways, there are no motors, there are no there's no electricity. It's just the elements in you, and you know, you have a lot of time to think and a lot of time to reflect, and it's so quiet, and you know, all of these memories come back from, you know, the things you do remember of your dad. I have a few memories of him. But my brother, Tom, my older brother, has even more. So, but my younger brothers, Rob and Paul, don't have any. So there was a gamut of experience there. But at the same time, we were focusing on just having fun as brothers and kind of getting to know each other past the superficial level of seeing each other at Christmas and saying, you know, how's things at home, and getting to a deeper level. So it was kind of a growth experience relationally, as well as kind of looking back at the past. And none of us had yet built our families of our own, so we were just kind of figuring out what it took to be a man in a single parent family that's going to someday have our own family. So it was really kind of a cool experience that we really hadn't intended to come out of it, but all of us got something out of it. So
oh, nice. Yeah, and, you know, yeah, looking back, doing the memoir or beginning the memoir, I think that's where you start to realize that you do have parallel experiences, you know, past and present, you know, you as a son and you as a father, you know, there are these
right.
parallels there. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So what might be some of your favorite lakes, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, we always went out of, most of the time we went out of Ely, and Snowbank Lake was our starting point most times, and we went from there, which is a big lake, but Boot Lake is in the next chain up from Snowbank. That was a good lake. We never really had great luck fishing. You know, we always went in late August, so the fishing was slow. But we always caught enough to have a fish dinner, and you know, we'd switch it up every few years to say, oh, let's try going out of Grand Marais instead of Ely. And when we went up there with the my high school friends, the first mistake we made was we did running water. We did a river system that had rapids and waterfall, and we just tried to challenge ourselves beyond our limits. So if I had any advice to give somebody going up the first time, I would say stick to lakes, stick to small lakes if you can, and just kind of learn get your feet under you before you try and take on anything in the running water category. Or if you do running water trips, I would recommend that you portage if you have any doubt in your mind about the level of rapids and whatnot. So that's what I learned on the way, was that, you know, caution prevails, should prevail, and every time you go up. So, but as far as lakes, they're all beautiful. They're all very similar in, you know, the structure of them. But it's all just serenity and peaceful and beautiful. So it's really, you can't go wrong no matter what lake you're on up there, really.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I've been up there in a couple of different places myself, and I agree. Yeah, and on some levels they're all the same, but on other levels, each one of them is different. So that's kind of
mm-hmm.
neat. And yeah, with the running water, you kind of hit on my next question there a little bit. Like, if you've got some tips for, you know, those going up, or tips for the wilderness, what might those be?
Well, the biggest one I would say is keeping your stuff dry. The first time we went up, we flipped in the rapids. Our food got wet. We didn't have enough for all of us to continue, so some of us had to go back after the first day because we just didn't pack our food correctly. We didn't pack it in trash bags and in Ziplocs or anything, so everything was wet and we had just minimal food to continue with. So, and clothes the same way. Especially if you're bringing cotton clothes. You're not supposed to bring cotton up there because it just doesn't dry fast. It doesn't hold the warmth like wool does. But at that time, we were just 20-somethings that didn't have a great budget, so we just go up there and kind of, we made a point of keeping our clothes dry because it was we had learned the hard way that if you don't, you're going to have wet clothes for the rest of the trip. So keeping things dry, you know, getting a good sight, and just being cautious on both on the trails when you're portaging and in taking on any kind of whitewater. Just make sure you've either taken out your equipment before you go over them, or you're sure you can peruse them without being stupid about it. So
yeah, kind of a safety first type situation for sure.
Absolutely, because there is no help out there. I mean, you pretty much got to paddle back to start, you know. So
oh yeah, I've had friends who have had issues out there with some broken bones here and there, and
right,
yeah,
right.
They made it out, but at the same time it's just like, ooh, this is a little hairy.
It'd be bad. Yeah, right.
Oh yeah. So you ever go up during the winter time? You ever, you know, do any winter camping or any kind of that stuff up there?
I have not. I'm a fair weather camper. You know, I go between the months of June and August, and I really a little bit into September, but I'm not a cold weather guy. I don't like to ice fish. I've never winter camped. A couple of my brothers have, but I just, I'm not into that level of discomfort. People do it and they say it's a whole different place, but I'm a fair weather camper, put it that way.
I think I'm in the same camp with you there. I've had known people that do winter camp, and it is a whole other place. It's called winter, and I don't really want to be there.
right, and it can get deathly cold, you know.
Oh yeah, you know, it's like, I mean, winter is winter, and we know what it is. I mean, you're in Wisconsin, we're in Minnesota. Right. They're pretty similar, but. Right. At the same time, they're similar enough where it's just, you know, I'd like to have a nice fire inside, and we'll deal with camping later. So,
mm-hmm. Right.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Today, we're talking with Jim Landwehr about his book, Dirty Shirt, a Boundary Waters memoir. Jim's going to be in town tonight, Wednesday, December 17th, at the Stearns History Museum for their book club, which starts at 6:30 p.m. So, Jim, it sounds like you're relatively new to the world of being a published author. What do you do for a day job?
Well, my day job is actually I'm a GIS analyst, GIS being Geographic Information Systems. So it's basically Google Maps at the local level. We collect data, we put it together, and build applications at a county, at Waukesha County, for people to use to find properties, to query data, to do planning and zoning kind of studies, site assessment and that kind of thing. So I've been in mapping for over 25 years, getting my degree at the University of Minnesota in Geography in 1985. I was lucky enough to be able to get a job in my field. So I've been fortunate that way. And it's really been a blessing because I absolutely love what I do, and I've done it for a long time. But when I turned about, I don't know what it was, my late 40s, I said, what am I going to do with this gift of writing that I've always liked to do? And I finally had a writing instructor I took a class with, and I said, what do I do with it? And she goes, well, get back in a class and see how it goes. I took a class through All Writers Workshop and Workplace in Waukesha, and the first night I was there, I said, this is exactly where I need to be. I said, I'm not of their caliber yet, but I said, there's some in this class that are, you know, not as good as me, you know, not to be boastful, but there was every level in there. And I thought, this is what it's all about, is everybody getting better. So that's been kind of my midlife kind of realization, that I have this gift that I would like to use. And it's a great outlet for me, and it's creativity. It's something totally different than my day job, which is technical, and it's, you know, computer based. This is all just kind of, you know, creative writing. So yeah, I write poetry. I've got a poetry collection I'm trying to get out by next spring through my publisher. And it's poetry is something that just kind of, I started messing around with it, and I've had pretty good success getting it published. So I'm like, I never thought of calling myself a poet, but my writing instructor says, Jim, you're a poet, and you know, you need to get over that. And so I still don't tell my fishing buddies that, but I do enjoy it. And it's just another form of writing. It's like writing a very, very short story. And if you're good at it, people will take notice. So I've had that. That was really what started my thirst for getting published, was getting this stupid little 10-line poem published. And I was like, wow, there it is in writing, you know, and that really fueled my interest for a lot of other avenues of submitting my work. So it's really been a labor of love all the way across the board. But I've even messed around with fiction. I've got a couple of zombie Sasquatch stories out there, believe it or not. So
hey, there's a genre I don't think's been tapped into yet.
Well, exactly, that's what I thought that's perfect. Nobody else has written about it, and I set it in the Boundary Waters, so it kind of tied into my other work. So it's been just a blast trying to play around with the writing and genres and having some success with it. And when the book came out, it was absolutely a dream come true. And I can't tell anybody enough that if they've ever thought about writing, you know, the best thing they can do is get into a collective workshop where you QC each other's work, you support each other, you encourage each other, and you make each other better. And then, you know, you can just go places after that. So it's really been a fun ride.
It is pretty incredible once you get into that. It actually kind of, you know, just ties all the way back. I mean, what you said right when you started talking about walking into that writing workshop, you felt this is the place where I'm supposed to be. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, that kind of comes back to just the boundary waters as well. Yeah, there's these, I mean, yeah, we've all got our day jobs and yeah, you're supposed to be there, but then there's this other thing. And when you find that other thing, then you kind of get that feeling, you know, this is where I'm supposed to be. And then.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking to that, you know, it's such a special place. I mean, it holds a lot of memories for me in my distant past and more recently with our kids. And part of the book is there's some real sadness near the end of it. During the writing of the book, my brother Rob passed away from cancer. And one of the things was we took his kids up a few years later because he would have wanted it that way. And it was one of his things he said to me is he said, take care of my girls. And that was part of our goal with going back without him. We took my nephew, who was also a child of a single parent at a young age because his dad died. So it actually worked out that we put him and his and Rob's daughter in a canoe together and called it the orphan canoe. And everybody had a little laugh about it, but it was really just a cool, powerful trip in that we went over the weekend of Father's Day, and she was up there with all of her uncles the summer after he passed, and it was just a really a kind of a spiritual, kind of mystical moment, you know, and what something she'll always remember, and I know I will, and I wanted to get that into the book. It was just so good, such a good story, you know. Yeah, I just had to tell it, so...
Oh, yeah. Just about every family has those kind of stories.
Right.
These moments that there's very serendipitous moments that that come up out of, well, sometimes it's necessity and sometimes it's taking care of that other part of the family. You know, that could be different for everybody. But I mean, when you find it, you do it. And then it's kind of wonderful.
Right. Yeah, it really was. It was a sad trip, but it was a cool trip too, in that we were literally, you know, passing on Rob's love of the area to his daughters. So it was really cool. We're probably going to go up again this coming summer with maybe both of his daughters this time. So it'll be fun to see what transpires during that trip, because we've got just the next generation kind of helping out the old guys.
And then it just kind of continues. They'll do it with their kids someday.
Right. That's what our hope is. And my brother Tom is actually the DNR commissioner for the state of Minnesota. And one of his taglines is take a kid fishing today. And his premise is always to get kids into the outdoors so that they can experience it. And, you know, with this generation of kids where we've got everybody tied to a screen of some sort, to get them out in nature and fishing and camping and hunting, it's just good for the soul. And I think we've lost that almost with a lot of this generation, and we need to work on it harder, I think. And that's kind of our goal as men. So.
Yep, I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
That's one of the points of being out in the middle of nowhere. This last trip we went with the kids, they didn't have anything to text with or a tablet or phone, nothing. And it was just, they had to make their own entertainment, and they did. And it was just fun to watch.
Anything else you want to, add about the book or coming to St. Cloud or the Boundary Waters or anything?
I'd like to talk a little bit about the next book I've got in mind.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Okay. Well, what I'm working on next is a book about the house I grew up in the 70s with a single parent and six kids. There is just a lot of really good stories coming out of that as far as funny stories. And with six kids and a working mother, something was always either on fire or leaking. So I think it's going to be a good collection. I think it's going to be a lot of humor in it, but I'm going to try and build in, much like I did with the Boundary Waters book, is build in some heartfelt moments too. And it's probably a good 4 or 5 years out, but that's what I'm looking at after the poetry collection. beyond that, I've got a book in mind that my uncle, who actually was from St. Cloud, he wrote a couple of books, and they never really got published, and he handed them to my brother and said, here, see if you can get them out there, and he didn't have any luck. So my thought was to take those books and rewrite every other chapter and try and build a little action into it, because they're a little bit on the slow side. So that was in my 10-year plan, is to have a co-authored book where each chapter is one of us, him or I. And that, I think that'd be really cool. It'd be a fun little project to take on. I may never get to it, but that's my hope for 10 years out. So I'm just having a lot of fun with all of it, and that's kind of my short, medium, and long-term plan. So,
well, it's good to have a plan.
Oh, right. Yeah, now it's just time and money, you know?
Yep.
So,
Quite. Well, Jim, we look forward to seeing you in St. Cloud, and yeah, thanks for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you, and I appreciate the chance to talk a little bit about Dirty Shirt.
And once again, you've been listening to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. We've been speaking with Jim Landwehr about Dirty Shirt, a Boundary Water memoir. Jim is going to be in town tonight, Wednesday, December 17th, at the Stearns History Museum, beginning at 6:30 p.m. for their monthly book club. For more information on that, you can find it on the Stearns History Museum website at stearns-museum.org. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through support by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.